Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for March 18th, 2014. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with Vitaslav Bria, Reinhard de Groot, and Rick Korswagen about a negative feedback loop in Wnt signaling that relies on ubiquitination. Ubiquitination is a reversible post-translational modification that affects the activity, the stability, or the subcellular localization of target proteins. Ubiquitin groups are covalently attached to target proteins by enzymes called ubiquitin ligases, and they can be removed by deubiquitinases. Like phosphorylation, ubiquitination is commonly used to control the flow of information through signaling pathways by altering the availability or the activity of signaling proteins. In a new study, Reinhard de Groot, Rick Korswagen, and Vitaslav Bria have found that a ubiquitin ligase targets the Wnt signaling component disheveled and inhibits its activity to negatively regulate Wnt signaling. Wnt signaling is one of the most widely used and reused signaling pathways in multicellular animals. It's important for embryonic development and tissue homeostasis, and misregulation of Wnt signaling can drive tumor formation. Wnt signaling is particularly important in breast, prostate, and colorectal cancers, so understanding the intricacies of Wnt pathway regulation has important implications for human health. Bria spoke to me by telephone from Masaryk University in Brno, Czech Republic, and Korswagen and de Groot from the Hubrecht Institute in the Netherlands. Dr. Bria, Dr. de Groot, Dr. Korswagen, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you.
Reinhard, you identified Huey from an RNAi screen for negative regulators of Wnt signaling. In that screen, you focused specifically on ubiquitin ligases. Why did you focus on those enzymes?
Well, as a matter of fact, we were interested in the mechanisms of Wnt secretion. And at around the time when I started this project, we had some indications that ubiquitination might be involved in Wnt secretion. So for this reason, we decided to screen all C. elegans ubiquitin ligases and deubiquitinating enzymes for a function in Wnt signaling. So one of the hits of this screen was IL-1. IL-1 is the C. elegans homolog of UE1, and IL-1 turned out to be important in Wnt signal transduction, but not in Wnt secretion. But it turned out to be an interesting gene anyway.
How did you do your screen? What was the phenotype that you scored for negative regulators of Wnt signaling?
So for this screen,
Rick Korswagen,
we looked at the Wnt-dependent migration of a neuroblast in C. elegans, which is called a Q cell. So normally this cell migrates towards the tail of the animal, but in mutants in which Wnt signaling is not working properly, the cell migrates in the opposite direction, and that is really easy to see. So you can see whether the cell is in the back of the worm or in the front of the worm. Now we're using a sensitized mutant background. We could screen for both activators and inhibitors of Wnt signaling, and this is how we found IL-1 in this screen.
The genetic epistasis experiments you did placed IL-1, the homolog of UA1, in the Wnt pathway upstream of beta-catenin, which is the transcription factor that accumulates in the nucleus and stimulates expression of Wnt target genes when the Wnt receptors are activated. How did you get a more precise placement of UA1 or IL-1 in the pathway?
Yeah, you're right.
Reinhard de Groot.
We did genetic epistasis experiments, and we discovered in this way that UA1 acts upstream of beta-catenin in the Wnt pathway. Then we had an important question to answer, and that is, does IL-1 act in the cells that make the Wnt or in the cells that receive the Wnt? And this would be a very important question. So to address this question, we did a tissue-specific RNAi experiment in C. elegans, where we knock down IL-1 only in cells that make Wnt or in cells that respond to Wnt, the Q cells. And in these experiments, we found that UB1 acts in the Wnt-receiving cells and not in the Wnt-producing cells. And then we were lucky because our collaborators in the lab of Vita, they found that UB1 interacts with disheveled. And this finding made it clear to us, or was the first indication, that UB1 might act by doing something to disheveled.
So Vita, does IL-1 ubiquitinate disheveled?
We know that UE1, or IL-1, ubiquitinates a conserved domain of disheveled, the Dix domain, and that it's known that Dix domains are critical for the formation of disheveled multimers, which then form a platform of large signaling complexes which are named signalosomes. and any interference with the multimerization potential of the shear root, then via its effect on signal systems, reduces signaling capacity of the whole wind pathway. So what we found and what our 3D modeling showed is that UV1-mediated ubiquitination of several residues within the Dix domain is strictly incompatible with the formation of Dix-Dix multimers, and this blocks the pathway.
UA1, EL1 ubiquitinates disheveled to interfere with wind signaling. What regulates the activity of UA1?
In the context of wind pathway, UA1 recognizes only the shield molecules which are phosphorylated by casein kinase 1 epsilon. Typically, casein kinase 1 gets activated by the wind ligand and then subsequently phosphorylates the shield. Such phosphorylation leads to the activation of the shield, which is reflected, for example, by the increased recruitment of other signals and components, such as axin 1. On the other side, the same process also marks the shield as activated. And this label later on allows recognition of active disheveled by the components of the negative feedback loop, such as UV1.
So CK1 phosphorylates disheveled, and that promotes wind signaling. But that phosphorylation of disheveled also promotes UA1 binding to disheveled, which downregulates wind signaling. How is that activity of CK1 controlled? Because if activation of disheveled and its promotion of inhibition of disheveled is equal, then why isn't the net effect on wind signaling zero?
Disheveled phosphorylation is a complex and so far incompletely understood process. It's been reported that disheveled is phosphorylated more than 40 residues. We know that casein kinase 1 epsilon itself can phosphorylate disheveled at multiple sites. We know about at least 15 sites. And we know that individual phosphorylations have different consequences. For example, phosphorylation in the central PDZ domain of disheveled activates wind signaling, whereas phosphorylation in the disheveled C-terminus interferes with the ability of disheveled to multimerize and form signals and have negative effects on the wind pathway. However, the detailed description of the dynamics and consequences of each single phosphorylation event remains an open question, which clearly requires further research.
Rick Reinoud, Vita, thank you for speaking with me.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
That was Vitaslav Gria, Reinhard de Groot, and Rick Korswagen discussing a paper published in the March 18th issue of Science Signaling by de Groot and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any questions or comments, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, AAAS, thanks for listening.